So thank you all so much for staying. I know it's getting late in the conference. I'm going to talk about a similar topic, opportunities for improving food landscapes, and then give some examples of how we've used policy at the local level to expand food access. In this talk, I'm going to just discuss kind of the link between food access and health, talk a little bit about food access in Illinois, some of the policy and environmental initiatives, including just a brief mention of the HEAL Act, and then some recommendations. Why food access? The Policy Lincoln Food Trust came out with a report about why food access matters. We know that for many Americans, healthy food is not accessible, both not only in urban areas, but really across states. A lot of times we talk about urban areas, but we don't think about those towns that have been traditionally farming areas, and now they don't have access to healthy food, which is sort of really interesting when you think about that. So communities of color, rural areas, and studies have found that if you live closer to healthy food, that is associated with better health outcomes. And then beyond that, even though we focus a lot on health, we know that food can really be an economic incentive for communities, and it stimulates economic activity. As was mentioned before by the previous speakers, about 30% of adults in Illinois are obese, and really about 62% are overweight. But what's striking is this increase since 1990. We see this, of course, nationally, and Illinois is no exception to that, where we've seen this increase over time in the rise of obesity. And the question is that a lot of people think about personal responsibility when they think about policy. Some people have used personal responsibility as a mechanism for which, or argument for why certain policies shouldn't be passed. But when you see this increase, you know it's something that's not happening. It's not individual choice. It's something that's happening at a population level. We also have issues when you think about just access to stores. In 2009, a report that was released in preparation for the Illinois Healthy Fresh Food Financing Fund found that about 500,000 Illinois residents live in areas with no or distance access to mainstream grocery stores with fresh produce. And then about 1 in 7 people are food insecure, and 1 in 5 children are food insecure. So even though there's a lot of focus on geographic access, we know that income matters and that people need income and resources to purchase food as well, not just be located close to a grocery store. So this may be hard to see. And actually, I don't know if you can hear me. Can you hear me if I come over? Oh, I can point. Okay, Terry is showing me.
Just take this. Oops, oh, back.
Okay. Oh, okay. All right, thank you. So in 2012, there was an article that came out from a group at WashU to look at different policies that were focused on promoting healthy eating, many which are linked to food access. So they looked at patterns and predictors of enactment of state childhood obesity legislation in the United States. And if you look at those that are related to access, so things like farm to school, at the school level, school food policy and vending policies, on the community level, they looked at each state in legislation that was linked to supporting community gardens and farmers markets, grocery stores, as well as things like Jenna mentioned about the soda tax and snack tax, as well as child care, nutrition, and physical activity and breastfeeding. If you look at Illinois as compared to other states, and I think this is really interesting because there's a lot of legislation that's introduced, but it's not always enacted. So in Illinois, about 41 bills were introduced, and about 12 of those were enacted, about 29%. I was really interested in the New York introduction of bills, 176 introduced with 22 enacted, so about 12%. And then some other states that have a smaller number, like Utah, that's a typo, it says 1,000, but it's 100% were enacted. In California, 77 were introduced, and 40% were enacted. If you look at Illinois, and a lot of these have been initiated by the Illinois Alliance to Prevent Obesity, so the HEAL Act, which was talked about, but other things to expand access, such as the double value programs, in farmers markets, in partnership with Experimental Station, our Childhood Obesity Consortium, which is in Chicago, the American Heart Association, to look at those double up bucks, which they call Link Up Illinois, where people can expand their purchasing power. Low-income families can expand their purchasing power at farmers markets. And I think one of the policies, which actually I just heard about in preparation for this talk, was in collaboration with the Illinois Stewardship Alliance to really look at how do you have supportive policies for expanding the number of cooperative grocery stores. I want to talk about an example that we've been involved in Chicago, with the Chicago Community Loan Fund. The Chicago Community Loan Fund received $3 million from the federal Healthy Fresh Food Financing Initiative to expand healthy retail options in Chicago communities that had low food access. This is sort of a move nationally because CCLF is a CDFI, they have traditionally been involved in other types of community development. So funding and providing affordable fixed-rate loan products to nonprofits, worker-owned cooperative businesses, and social enterprises. CCLF has been involved recently after receiving the funding in healthy food lending in several community areas across Chicago, including some of the communities that you hear about, of those that are in the Chicago area, Inglewood, Grand Boulevard. So in Inglewood, CCLF has some funding in the Whole Foods that's going to be at 63rd in Halsted. In Grand Boulevard, there is a location that's called Urban Juncture that is more community-driven, and it includes sort of a diverse selection of food retail, including a restaurant and other types of retail options. In Roseland, it includes a community-driven project called Imani Village, where a church and faith-based organization purchased 30 acres at the corner of 95th and Cottage Grove to create sort of a livable, walkable community that will include a food hub as well as an urban farm, and then Woodlawn area as well as other low food access areas. What's unique, and I apologize for the slides, what's unique about this project is that CCLF, in addition to receiving funding to provide the loans for the food retailers, they also provide funding to community-based organizations, and they developed a community consortium to make sure that the food retail options were informed by the community, as well as that the community would work to help promote overall healthy food access in the community at large. Because previous projects have found that when you bring in that larger store, that some of the smaller retailers close, or they change their product mix, where some of the initiatives may move those corner stores and smaller stores to carry fruits and vegetables. If they feel like they're in competition with that larger store, they may focus only on those unhealthy food options. The other thing that is important about the community consortium is that even when you bring in a larger store, previous work has found that it doesn't provide access across the community. That some people that lack transportation still are not able to reach that larger store as frequently and depend on smaller stores with smaller trips throughout the week. So the purpose of the community consortium is really to improve residents and existing food retailers' awareness of healthier food options through education, outreach, and community organizing. So these organizations are boots on the ground. They're going door to door. They're convening residents as well as convening corner store owners. The group is also, we're the academic partner for the CCLF project, and we focused on training the community residents and community organizations in collecting baseline data and doing their own evaluation of their efforts. So we serve, they give the data to us and we crunch the numbers, but they're on the ground collecting the data, engaging with the stores and doing store assessments, doing surveys with community residents that they're serving to learn more about what they want to see as far as food retail. The organizations are listed here. We have one technical assistance partner, the Inner City Muslim Action Network, which has developed a model specifically to engage immigrant corner store owners, where we have predominantly Middle Eastern corner store owners, immigrant corner store owners that are operating in African American communities. And so they have served as a technical assistance partner in engaging those store owners, as well as the West Humboldt Park Development Council. But, which this is, unfortunately, as I mentioned, the slides are distorted, but one of the things that we're realizing in our project, as well as other projects, in thinking about policy, and really this is just a little food for thought. We know from other studies that look at population-based health that some of the determinants of food access as well as food insecurity include other things kind of beyond what we think are health-related or food-related. So if you think about access to food, financial resources and transportation, knowledge and skills, storage facilities, preparation, time, mobility, social support, et cetera. And then if we go even further upstream, employment, income, education, housing, and social inclusion. The Santa Clara, I think it was the Santa Clara Health Department, put out this really nice diagram about upstream and downstream, where we are right now in our current public health practice. And when you look at the policies that have been enacted, most of the policies focus sort of somewhere in the middle. So we're thinking about how to change risk behaviors, smoking, nutrition, physical activity. And we're doing that more through some zoning when you look at urban agriculture, but less on things like racial segregation, experiences of class, experiences of race, gender, looking at institutional power. So if you look at the policies are really on behavior change, less on those things that are more structural issues. Policy Link actually put out a report where they included some data for Illinois, and they looked at income and equity. And I think the move in public health, and that's why I said sort of food for thought, is this idea of how do we move from policies that really focus on individual behavior and include some of those policies that focus on more income inequity, racial segregation, and racism, which is the theme of public health for next year under Kamara Jones. This is in Illinois from 1980 to 2012, and looking at people of color as compared to majority populations. When you look at the income inequity over time, that income inequity is not shrinking over time since 1980. It continues to persist. Policy Link also looked at What kind of income gains would you have with racial equity? If you look at the average income with racial equity in the blue as compared to the average income right now. So if you alleviated that racial inequity, then, you know, what would you have when you close that gap? So I think just in closing, although most of the policies have really focused on shaping behavior, where do we go if we think about policies to affect some of those structural factors?